The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. There is no greater community builder than adoption. Welcome to Your Adoption Coach with host Kelly Ellison. If you are starting an adoption or just thinking about it, or maybe someone you know is going through an adoption and you want to help, please stay tuned over the next hour as we will educate and inspire you with some real stories and information about resources that can help. Now, here is your host, Kelly Ellison.
Welcome. We are so glad that you are joining us today. You're listening to Your Adoption Coach Radio, where our goal is to inspire and educate you all about adoption. I just want to say thank you to everyone. On this date, 3 years ago, we had our first broadcast, and I remember that show. I remember my guest. I remember how nervous I was doing that show for the first time. And what a wonderful response we got from that particular show. And just continue to hear from our listeners about how much they appreciate all the information that we provide to them every week. So if you know someone who is considering adoption, we'd love it if you'd share our show with them. If you'd like to also send us a suggestion, we love hearing from you. You can always email me at coach@youradoptioncoachradio.com. You can also check out our archives, over 155 shows that we have done for you, presenting them every week. You can pick from any topic, anything related to adoption. And I just want to say thank you to all of those who continue to listen to our show, share our show, keep on listening, because we have so much more to share every week. So last week we had Brian Franklin from the Joint Council with us talking about international adoption and the role of the Joint Council for International Children's Services. Very, very key, important organization as it relates to international adoption. Most of you know that international adoption has been in a steep decline over the last year, 2 years, the lowest numbers we have ever seen in international adoption from the U.S. And it's just troubling. It's very troubling for those of us who are kind of watching this process unfold in front of us. Brian is an adoptive parent and also the board chair for the Joint Council. And he had some very interesting perspectives to share with us about the politics, the landscape, just this changing landscape of international adoption. And I think if I've said this to all of you before, as you listen to this show, there is a huge need, 450 million orphans in our world who are looking for homes in there. And unfortunately, because of political issues, because of all types of paperwork issues, there are so many children who are stuck in orphanages across the world. So please do stay attuned to that issue. And if you're someone who is drawn to international adoption, we would invite you to reach out to an agency, an accredited agency in your area. One who works with us is European Adoption Consultants, EACI.com. So today I'm so excited. We have a new friend, Nishta Mira, who was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. Nishta studied religion and sociology at Rice University before earning her master's in fine arts in creative nonfiction from the University of Arizona. Nishta's first book, The Pomegranate King, is a collection of essays and was published in 2013. She teaches high school in Houston, Texas, where she lives with her partner, Jill Carroll, and their son, Shiv. Recently, Nishta wrote an article for Guernica, a magazine for art and politics, and I was really struck by this article on a number of different levels. And I know that Nisha and I are going to have some fun conversation today. The title of the article is "The Color of My True Love's Hair is Black." It's an article on interracial adoption in post-racial America. Nisha, thanks so much. Welcome. Welcome for being
thank
on the show.
Thank you for having me. And congratulations on your anniversary.
Yes, thank you. It went by quickly. It really went by very
quickly.
It does.
When you're doing good work, that's how it works.
Yes, yes. And it's been so much fun. I have to say that it's a highlight of the work that we do. Most of the folks that listen to the show know that we really, the adoption finance coaches, we really help families to raise money for their adoptions. We coach families. We work with agencies. But a highlight of just the work that we do is bringing this show to people every week and bringing them guests like yourself who can just kind of turn the box on its ear, give them a different perspective, thinking about things in so many different ways. So first, I always want to hear, is Shiv, is that the correct way to
yes,
pronounce it?
Shiv. Is,
okay. Is this a short name?
From Shiva.
Shiva, okay.
Who's one of the major gods in Hinduism. My family is from India. I was born here in the States. I'm first generation. But we really wanted an Indian name for our son or daughter. And so Shiv comes from Shiva.
Oh, that's it's a great name. So he is, how old is he now?
He will be 3 in July.
Okay. And you adopted Shiv domestically, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, and was he an infant?
We took him home from the hospital. So
okay.
We were really blessed. Our birth mother was very generous with us. We were in the room when he was born, and I held him, you know, he was just minutes old, and we took him home from the hospital 2 days later.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience. I have not had that personal experience myself. Obviously, our daughter is from China, so we did not have that birthing experience, but I can tell you that I had my own birthing experience carrying her for
right? Carrying there are lots of different
China.
Ways to give birth.
Yes,
right?
Lots of different ways.
Not just about biology.
So I'm curious about just the concept of adoption, Nisha. Were you touched by adoption in any way prior to going through the adoption with your own son?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess our story, my personal story, I always knew that I wanted to adopt someday. Mm-hmm. My parents dealt with really serious infertility. I'm an only child, so I was the sort of last gasp attempt to make a biological baby happen. I wasn't really even supposed to happen. I just, as like many couples, once they gave up on the treatments, they got pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had considered adoption, ended up not going that route. And I always had in the back of my mind, you know, I'd really love to do that. I have two close friends who were both adopted as infants. And it just was always something that I felt called to do.
Right, right.
I didn't know how it would look or what it would look like or if I would, you know, where that would fall, if I would biologically have children and also adopt or what. I, you know, when you're 15, you have no idea what your life is going to look like. But
right.
I always knew that was going to be part of the plan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think sometimes there are clues I will share with you that when I arrived home with our daughter, I wanted to go to my hometown and share that, obviously, with my girlfriends. And I remember sitting with one of my girlfriends talking about our adoption. And she said, well, you know, Kelly, you talked about this when you were in high school, about how the day that you would bring your Chinese daughter home wrapped in a pink blanket.
Wow.
And I didn't even remember that. I mean, I was just
amazing.
Like, what? I said what? So I think that there are sometimes clues when you are in your adolescence about, you know, things that you want to do. So tell us about Shiv. You made the decision to do a domestic adoption, and so you pursued that. Tell us a little bit about his story.
Sure. So my partner and I, we live here in Houston, and we're lucky that there's a wonderful agency here that we worked with who's very open to all different types of families. We knew that there were lots of different options we could pursue, but we just didn't want to have to fight or hide or sort of be anything less than completely 100% transparent about mm-hmm. who we are in our family, and that just didn't feel right to us. So we worked with an agency that was super welcoming of gay and lesbian couples, and, you know, the process happened actually was delayed by my partner had cancer, and we went through cancer treatment. Sort of that all happened right when we were planning to start the adoption process. So that pushed us back in time. But you know, it's one of those things, right? You look and you think that process was such a strengthening thing for the two of us as a couple that, not that I'm glad we went through it, but it definitely, I think, created a partnership between the two of us even stronger, so that pushing through the adoption process, which can be so emotional and trying
and
stressful, we sort of felt we had our game faces on before it. So we you know, we did our research and found an agency and did all the things that you do, you know, put your whole life on paper and get all your documents in order and figure out who you're going to tell and what you're not going to say, you know, all those things.
Yes, yes.
It's a difficult thing, you know, to know who do you tell, oh, we're starting this process, and then all these other people are waiting with you, and does that make it better or harder? So we navigated that space. We were really blessed. We waited basically 9 months from the time we turned in paperwork until we got the email. And when we were matched with our son's birth mother, she was, she ended up giving birth 17 days later.
So, oh my gosh.
It was a whirlwind. It was an incredible whirlwind. I'm always glad that I didn't have more time to prepare, because I think I just would have stressed myself out. Our friends were amazing, threw us a baby shower in 1 week, you know, and we just took the approach, babies don't need actually that much, and people have been doing this for thousands of years in caves, we'll be fine, you know. We went kind of minimalist with the stuff. And we only had a short amount of time, obviously, with his birth mother, but it was, I think, one of the biggest surprises for me about the adoption experience was how much can be created in that short amount of time in terms of intimacy with this stranger, essentially, who has said, I want to give you my child. I want you to be the parent of my child. Mm-hmm. And it's just impossible. Like, I can't even talk about it without crying, right? The deep trust and faith and just instant connectedness. It's very strange and hard to know how to navigate it, but it's also one of the most beautiful things I have ever experienced in my whole life. So that's how we got our boy. It was just this crazy 17 days. I induced lactation. I know that some other adoptive moms have done the same. So if anyone out there has done that, they know what kind of a whirlwind that entails too. So,
oh my goodness,
we were just on the train running.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was like 17 days and then all of a sudden, yeah. So, I take it you have an open adoption. Do you have an open adoption with
Shiv's
mom?
We do. We have a partially open agreement. So
okay.
We were in communication with his birth mom, I would say pretty regularly for the first year of his life. We had each other's cell phone numbers, and she would ask, you know, to how he was doing and to see pictures. And since his first birthday, she's been out of touch.
Yeah.
She can get in touch with us through the agency at any time, and we would certainly welcome that. But, you know, we don't know. We're certainly speculating. But my suspicion is that it's maybe emotionally easiest for her at this point to not be in communication.
Right.
She was quite young, and she does have other children that she's raising, and so we hope that that no news is good news, in the sense that she's, you know, able to be, you know, living her life in a way that feels right for her, and we would certainly welcome hearing from her in the future.
That's great. Well, sorry to interrupt. We do need to take just a short break, but we are going to come back again. I am with Nishta Mira, who is her first book, The Pomegranate King, collection of essays published in 2013. But today we're talking about her article, The Color of My True Love's Hair is Black, an Interracial Adoption in Post-Racial America. So you're listening to Kelly Ellison, your Adoption Coach Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you. America's Christian Credit Union believes every child deserves a forever family. Our adoption loan program has helped over 500 children find a loving home. We understand the adoption process and will work with you to find the financial solution that will be best for your family. Find out about our adoption loans on our website at www.americaschristiancu.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-343-6328. Once again, that's 1-800-343-6328 for an adoption loan with America's Christian Credit Union on approved credit and rates subject to change without notice, federally insured by the NCUA.
Do you dream of adopting a newborn but don't know where to begin? Are you facing an unplanned pregnancy and want to learn about adoption as an option? Adoption Network Law Center can help. Adoption Network Law Center is a California law corporation providing quality adoption services to adopting parents and birth mothers. Our entire staff is dedicated to helping guide everyone in the adoption triad through the process with integrity and complete support. Call us to learn more at 877-292-4188. 877-292-4188. Adoption Network Law Center, helping build families one miracle at a time.
Considering international adoption but don't know where to begin or which agency to select? Let EAC, a nonprofit Hague-accredited agency, guide you on your adoption journey. EAC will walk with you through the country selection and paperwork processes. EAC separates itself from other agencies by providing world-class in-country staff who will allow you to focus on your adoption journey. EAC has been assisting families and children for over 20 years. Let EAC's experience work for you. EAC is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 1-866-586-5656 or visit www.eaci.com.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are listening to Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. Please send questions or comments about the show to coach at youradoptioncoachradio.com. Now, back to the show.
And we are back. Thanks so much for staying with us. You're listening to Your Adoption Coach Radio, where each week our show, our links, our resources mentioned on this week's show can all be found at youradoptionfinancecoach.com. At youradoptionfinancecoach.com, you're also going to learn from our coaches great fundraising ideas, step-by-step plans to how to complete your dream of adoption. Most folks know that our services are provided through our affiliate agencies. Some new agencies we have joining us are Hopscotch Adoption, Family Connections, Christian Adoptions, EACI, New Beginnings, A Step Ahead, Adoption and Beyond, WACAP, Spence Chapin, Stephenson Associates. I could go on and on. The list just continues to grow. We are always so delighted to have agencies that are joining us to provide our innovative financial services to help you, your clients, their clients, bridge the gap for finances. You can check out our website for a complete list of our agencies. Again, that's at youradoptionfinancecoach.com. So we are back with Nishta Mira, who her first book, The Pomegranate King, was a collection of essays, was published in 2013. So you're a writer, obviously, and a teacher, Nishta. So tell us a little bit about The Pomegranate King. Give us kind of a scope. What's that book about?
Sure. That was a collection of essays grew out of my time in my MFA program. And okay. It deals a lot with issues of identity. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm first-generation Indian immigrant, and so that was an interesting experience.
Yes.
I grew up in sort of two worlds. I went to a predominantly white private school, which I loved, and also had this world of very close-knit immigrant families that I grew up in, so sort of navigating those two things. Then I came out when I was in college and navigating that identity with my family and, the community of my origin certainly proved to be tricky in some ways and also mm-hmm. very rewarding in others. And then another sort of big piece in the book is about grief. I lost my father very suddenly when I was 23. And writing through those experiences is also a section, a piece in that book. So,
well, I have to tell you, I love your writing. When I landed on this article, The Color of My True Love's Hair is Black, when I landed on that article, I was just instantly drawn to it. I don't know if it was the title. I don't know what it was, but really drawn to it. I could totally identify with you in the article. I cannot tell you how many times someone has said, my daughter obviously is Chinese, what part of an white Irish lady, red-headed lady, okay, when we're together. And it doesn't happen every day. So you pointed out in your article, this happens, you know, on a pretty frequent basis for you because of just kind of your family composition. But it doesn't happen to me every day. It only happens to me sometimes. And it really happened to us when she was little and I would be, you know, carrying her. I was even asked if I was her grandmother one time and I thought I was going to kill myself. I was like, please don't anyone ever say that to me again. So that was probably the worst thing. But folks are so, well, I want you to just talk with our listeners about the premise of the article, because I saw myself in the article. I identified with myself when you talk about white privilege. I identified with that right away. Could you just talk a little bit about, for those who have not had a chance to read the article, what's the premise of it? Yeah.
Well, I think there's so many pieces to this, and, you know, for me, writing is obviously also for me to figure out what I think about something I write. First of all, it was to help me make sense of our experiences over the last almost 3 years now, just everything that we didn't expect or know that was going to happen, or just sort of how everything has changed in so many wonderful ways and then some really difficult and tricky ways, too. I think, you know, it's wonderful to hear that the piece resonated with you, and I was really blessed to hear from a lot of readers who echoed the same. And to me, what that really indicates is just we have this very monolithic idea of what family is and what family mm-hmm. looks like.
Right.
And we think that we can sort of look at a group of people in the grocery store, at the movie theater, or whatever, and decide who they are for each other and how they're related to each other. And we really just can't. And mm-hmm. I think that's changing so much more and so much more rapidly as you see, you know, sort of, you know, increase in interracial and mixed race families. And that visibility is so important. And so part of what the piece was really about is just normalizing all types of families and talking about some of the damage that we do, whether it's conscious or unconscious, when we do things like make forms for schools or doctor's offices that have mother and father written on them, right? Mm-hmm. Or when we right. talk about mothering only being connected to birth and pregnancy, right? Things
right,
that are
right.
just built into the culture and that we do unconsciously, I think, a lot. But it reifies this idea that there's one way for a family to look. Mm-hmm. So that's what I really wanted to explore, because I think that that does harm to all kinds of people. Because most of our families don't fit into those boxes. You know,
so
we have blended
true.
Families. We have, you know, families of different colors and different faiths, and it just doesn't represent the real diversity that's out there.
Right, right. I agree with you. And it's so interesting. I'm going to quote this out of your book, out of your article. It says, "It's exhausting to have strangers view your life as an up-for-grabs educational experience. For my kid, it's to constantly hear the underlying message, your life, your family doesn't make sense to me. Someone needs to explain it to me. You owe me an explanation." So, yeah, great. It was just really great. And you talk about at the beginning of the article an example of a card that you want to hand out to people. I had to laugh. I mean, it's a little irreverent. You have to admit,
I know.
Right, Nisha? It's kind of like, you know, hear from this pissed off mom, right?
You know, sometimes you get really tired, right? I want to be gracious and I want to assume the best, right? But there are times when it's the third time you've heard this today, or, you know, it's just the context can be really tricky. And so sometimes I just want to be like, listen, people, my life is not your business. You know, it's just like when I hear friends who are pregnant, visibly pregnant, and people will come up and touch them in public, right? Like, who thinks that's okay?
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah,
in
yeah.
what world is it okay to walk up and ask someone how they got their child? You know, like, I'm going to ask you, you know, how did you get pregnant? You know, like, tell me your birth story to a stranger in the middle of the grocery store. I, I just don't understand why, because my family looks quote-unquote different, that means that people think they can ask me these deeply personal questions when I have never met them before, right?
Right, right.
That's where the sort of the idea for the little business card, like, please mind your own business, comes from. I haven't made them yet, but I've definitely been tempted at times.
Yes, and I want to say that I've been on the receiving end of that, and then I've also been, because I'm so connected to adoption in so many ways, and I think I'm relatively informed about adoption, about couples, about the language we use, mm-hmm. the politically correct language that we use, but still, I find myself in a situation where I find a transracial family, and I'm curious, okay?
Sure.
I'm just downright
sure.
curious. I want to know. I want to hear their story. I want to hear it all, right?
Sure.
And it's probably because of who I am as a professional. But I still stumble. I still totally stumble. Sometimes
sure.
I defer to not saying anything and walking away and not connecting with those people
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to embarrass and I don't want to make them mad or I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to say
right.
something inappropriate.
Of course.
And I feel like that we all kind of suffer from that a little bit. It's this desire to connect, but then not really knowing how.
Right. And I completely understand. I completely agree. I think sometimes it can just be as simple as acknowledging the awkwardness of a situation. Do you know? I mean, I've definitely been there before, too, where I wanted to engage with or interact with a family. And sometimes, you know, all there is to say is, I completely understand if you don't want to have this conversation with me or, you know, forgive me for barging in, right?
Right.
Here's where I'm coming from. You know, would you be willing to share your story with me? And I think even just that small change in tone or approach, right,
mm-hmm,
is
mm-hmm.
and not presuming or assuming or seeming entitled to someone's story, right, but requesting that as a gift,
mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes can make it. Now, some people just don't want to talk, and that's totally their prerogative. But
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know that for me on the receiving end, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, right, you can tell where someone's coming from, whether it's the tone of voice or just the way they're approaching you, right? If they're being nosy or if they're being sort of genuinely desiring of a human connection.
Right.
And when it's the latter, you know, of course, I'm going to engage. That's, you know, I think we owe each other that decency. And because I want anyone who's interested in adoption or maybe even thinking about it, right, I never want to shut down that opening or possibility to share with someone else. So
right,
it is
right.
attention. It's definitely attention.
Yes, it is. And there's a question about those who really want to express care. You know, you mentioned this in your article again, quoting, our family doesn't fit well into the boxes. We don't fit at all. Often I sense this really sweet and completely awkward desire that some folks have to express what they see, affirm and support our family. This is not to say that they approve per se, but demonstrate something along the line of, I think your family is great and I want to convey that, but I'm not really sure how. That's so well said, Nishta, because that's very true. That's how I'm feeling when I see a transracial family and I just want to know. Where are they from? Well, you'll tell me more. You know, I'm just curious about that, and I really want to connect with them in a way. But this has been one of the things that I noticed in the article that you wrote about is that because of your lens, this has been happening to you pretty much your entire life. So this hasn't really just been happening since you guys adopted your son. Right.
Right.
Questions about who you are, where you were born. You said at one point about growing up in the South that you learned not to add fuel to the fire. tell us about what that means. I can see your mother shaking her finger at you.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, yes, that is true. I think part of it is that was that fear, that immigrant fear of the unknown and sort of wanting to make sure that I would have a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it comes down to is the frustration of being an unwitting representative for a whole group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're the only Indian person someone knows, or you're the only lesbian couple someone knows, or you're mm-hmm. the only Black person someone knows, or what, right, like that. You don't want to be, and you don't mean to be, and you don't feel qualified to speak for said group, but you're often approached or related to as if you supposed to, right? Or
right.
as if you do speak for that whole group. And
right.
that's something that I did experience my whole life growing up. I mean, I can't even tell you the number of times people have said things to me like, hey, I know this Indian couple in Michigan. Do you guys know them? Like,
oh my gosh, like,
right?
You know
like,
them.
I mean, it's just insane. and there are times when I was a sassy teenager that I said things like, hey, I know some white people in California. Do you happen to know them? Right? Like, because sometimes
right.
people don't see the absurdity, right? Until you flip yeah. that on its head. So I think that's part of the frustration for me with my son is that he is experiencing so much of the same sort of questioning that I grew up with. That I, you know, would sort of hope we had shifted. You know, I'm not that old, but I'm 33. You know, you'd think that like some things
we've haven't made we made
movement,
any progress
right?
at all, right?
So that is some of the frustration. There's a lot of layers, I guess. There are a lot of layers.
Right, right. I get it. I really get it. We're going to take a short break. Again, I am with Nishtha Mira, who has written a wonderful article called The Color of My True Love's Hair is Black on Interracial Adoption in Post-Racial America. If you'd like to get a copy of the article or learn more about Nishtha's work, you can go to her blog at bluejeangourmet.com. That's bluejeangourmet.com. And you're listening to Kelly Ellison, Dear Adoption Coach Radio. Do stay with us. We'll be back for more.
Considering international adoption but don't know where to begin or which agency to select? Let EAC, a nonprofit Hague-accredited agency, guide you on your adoption journey. EAC will walk with you through the country selection and paperwork processes. EAC separates itself from other agencies by providing world-class in-country staff who will allow you to focus on your adoption journey. EAC has been assisting families and children for over 20 years. Let EAC's experience work for you. EAC is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 1-866-586-5656 or visit www.eaci.com.
Do you dream of adopting a newborn but don't know where to begin? Are you facing an unplanned pregnancy and want to learn about adoption as an option? Adoption Network Law Center can help. Adoption Network Law Center is a California law corporation providing quality adoption services to adopting parents and birth mothers. Our entire staff is dedicated to helping guide everyone in the adoption triad through the process with integrity and complete support. Call us to learn more at 877-292-4188. 877-292-4188. Adoption Network Law Center, helping build families one miracle at a time.
America's Christian Credit Union believes every child deserves a forever family. Our adoption loan program has helped over 500 children find a loving home. We understand the adoption process and will work with you to find the financial solution that will be best for your family. Find out about our adoption loans on our website at www.americaschristiancu.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-343-6328. Once again, that's 1-800-343-6328 for an adoption loan with America's Christian Credit Union on approved credit and rates subject to change without notice, federally insured by the NCUA.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. Please send questions or comments about the show to coach at youradoptioncoachradio.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back. We're with Nishtha Mira, who is an author, writer. Her most recent article published in Guernica, Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair. You can find a copy of the article and information about Nishtha's work at bluejeangourmet.com. Love having this conversation about just one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Nishtha, is this, the name of the article. Obviously, I get it. Black is the color of my true love's hair. But then you said in post-racial America.
Right.
What does that mean?
That post-racial is in quotes.
Yes.
Just for those folks who are listening and haven't seen it. And I think I just really wanted to play with this idea that, you know, there are folks who like to talk about race in this country like we're done. You know, like we figured out what our problems were and we solved them. And I just find that idea so, I want to laugh, but then it's so sad to me that people actually can think that. It's bizarre. I really wanted to name that, you know, that people talk about our post-racial society. I'm like, okay, no, we're no.
And if you're paying attention to the news, certainly Ferguson, Baltimore, I mean, if you're paying attention to the news, you'd almost think that we have gone back several hundred years, right?
In terms of that tension. I think that a lot of stuff is coming up, right, that has never gone away, is the thing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have lived certain lives, or they live in certain ways, that those things have not been visible to them. And so now with some of the things you mentioned, the things are, you can't ignore them, right? They're sort of very much in our face.
Right. And the thing that I'm just going to admit this, reading your article, I said this to you while we were on the break, reading your article, I recognized myself. You talk about white privileged folks, right? I am one of those people. I mean, I recognize myself as I read it. It scares me. It scares me when I read that. And there's so much that I don't know. And there are so many adoptive families out there, international adoptive families, interracial adoptive families. There are so many of us out there that have the responsibility of raising and having an interracial family. That it. What's so scary about it is that I don't even know the questions to ask. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I have this lens, I don't even really know what to watch for. I mean, we do our best to make sure that our daughter has an understanding for her culture. You know, we have a plan for school and for her to learn Mandarin. I mean, do you know what I'm saying? But it's really hard, especially when I read your article, that I'm so aware that I just don't even know really where to begin.
Well, I think it's true of all parenting, right? We don't necessarily know what we don't know. And I think, to me at least, my basic principle as a parent is to always follow my child as much as I can, right? Mm-hmm. To follow his lead. You know, I think any of us who are parents who have been around kids know that they come out themselves, right, in a lot of ways, right? Like, they're their mm-hmm. own people. And they can teach us a lot about what they need. I really believe that. I think that there are best practices or better practices that we can have as parents. I think a huge thing is visibility, you know, for your child to be able to look around and see people who look like them, not just necessarily only in the home, right? Sometimes that's not how it works. I mean, my son is the only black person in his immediate family. But in the books that we read, in the places that we go, restaurants that we eat, friends that we spend time with, in the media that I consume, right? I've sort of deliberately widened my circle of media that I consume. I think that's a really easy way to sort of maybe learn what some of the questions are to ask.
Good point.
And I think, you know, any kid has to work out their own identity, no matter what kind of family they grow up in. And that's a process they each have to do on their own. And we never know. Are they going to want to embrace their culture? Are they going to push it away? Are they going to do some combination of the two? Mm-hmm. You know, I think our job as parents is always to be resources for our kids and to provide sort of safe boundaries and parameters where they get to experiment and discover. And so I think that it can be done. I'm not saying at all that I think, you know, parents of different racial or ethnic backgrounds can't raise their children in an affirming, safe way. I think that we have to move away from this notion of being colorblind or talking about color like it doesn't matter, because I think we do a disservice to our children when we throw that notion around.
So I want to ask you about that, because you made the comment about not seeing color, and that really it really struck home for me. And oftentimes we talk about how our kids play. You gave the example of the person in your story about, oh, they don't see color. Mm-hmm. When kids play with their friends, black, white, Asian, Indian, you know, that it's their parents really that draw these lines, I think. It's so subtle. My perspective is it's so subtle. I have to admit, Nishta, that I was a little confused because, and obviously from my perspective, I was a little confused. Do I draw the line or do I not draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talked about selecting a school for your son. We went through this same process, and my criteria was that I wanted a school that was diverse. My daughter goes to a Montessori school. It's an urban inner city school, and it is a Montessori school. But one of the reasons that I selected that school is because there's so much diversity. There are 15 adoptive families in that school.
Wow.
15. And I wanted that to be an important part of her life, that she was not the only one that was adopted. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So my question is when you made the point about not seeing color, at where talk about that a little bit. Are we to draw that line or not draw that line? What's your perspective
right.
on that?
You know, again, I do think it's attention, and I don't think it's ever a question that we fully resolve. I have a friend, and she is one of the people that I've reached out to throw ideas around on, and I trust her so much, and she always says this thing, right? Because I'll say, are we subverting the dominant paradigm if we do this, or are we reinforcing it, right? Like, if we deliberately
right, yeah.
choose to take Shiv to see an African-American Santa, like, is that pushing it too hard, or is that
right.
such a good idea, right? Like,
yeah.
which one is it? And, you know, my friend Courtney, she says, you know, it's always both. We're always doing some of both. There's no way to escape that, right? I think what we can't do is ignore, mm-hmm. because I think this idea, this notion of not seeing color is a piece of privilege. There's no way to live in our society as a person of color and not see your color, because it's constantly sort of being reflected, right? Like, we look at magazines, there's a film coming out about that's set in Hawaii, which is the most diverse state in the country, and all the lead actors are white, including the woman who's supposed to be Asian. It's played by Emma Stone, who's a great actress, definitely not Asian.
Oh,
you
yes,
know?
I know this movie. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Right? And so when you live in a culture or society where that's just normal and nobody bats an eye, as a person of color, you're going to see color. There's no way. And, you know, I see it with my son. He gets really excited when there's a book with a little boy who looks like him. He gravitates towards children on the playground who are also black. He has that. I think that's very human, you know, the familiarity and the comfort of sameness. So again, I think there's no right answer.
There's
always that tension. And as parents, right, we're always sort of looking at our choices and thinking, does this fit with our values? Is this, you know, consistent with what we hope for our child? Mm-hmm. But I think the importance is the awareness, right, that we can't not grapple with this, I guess is what I'm saying. I think as parents of children of color or of adoptive parents or part of an interracial family, we have to grapple with it. It's going to be uncomfortable. We're not going to know what the right answer is, but we have to do the work of digging in.
Right, right. And do you think that that's probably, I mean, when we talk about, there's a lot of information out there about transracial adoption. There is a lot of information that you
great.
You know, from
so
various different adoption websites and those types of things. What do you think? Do you think that's the biggest obstacle, is to learn how to balance that? How would you describe that? What's kind of the biggest obstacle in terms of trans having a transracial family?
I think the balance maybe is one of the trickiest things. I think it's part of what you referred to earlier of not necessarily knowing what even to ask. For me, I think it was the surprises, right? There were things that I knew to expect, right? I knew that adopting a child of a different background than me was going to raise some eyebrows, or that it was going to push me into sort of uncharted waters.
Right.
But I didn't I didn't realize how sort of much attention we would get in public, right? Like, I didn't, there were all these things that were unanticipated. And so I think part of the challenge, and that's kind of the challenge of parenting, period, right, is you sort of never know what's coming the next day.
Right.
And so I think one of the things that I found really helpful, my partner and I, when our son was very little, was we selected four guiding core values that we really wanted to imbue in him. And for us, they're courage, creativity, kindness. And we use those values to really sort of focus our decisions around, right? When we chose a school, when we chose how to spend our time as a family, right? Do these things support those values, right? And the issues of race and color come up within that framework, but it's not the dominant lens that we look through, because we don't want him to become so self-conscious about our family situation, right? I mean, to him, it's very normal at this point in his life, right? He doesn't know anything else.
Right, right.
So I think we really hope to follow his lead as much as we can. We seek advice from friends who are in similar situations, or who, you know, our African American friends have been wonderful resources for us. But ultimately, every child is very different, and we're just trying to pay attention, you know, and meet his needs sort of as we see them come up.
Right, right. And I think we're going to take a short break, but I think that this whole definition of family, we just kind of throw it up on the wall. I mean, we've got to redefine that in so many different ways, and we can talk more about that when we come back from our break. So again, I am with Nishtha Mira, who has written an article, The Color of My True Love's Hair is Black, on Interracial Adoption and Post-Racial America. You can find the information about Nishtha and her work and the article at BlueJeanGourmet.com. That's BlueJeanGourmet.com. A call out for our sponsor, Adoption Network Law Center, is a California corporation providing quality adoption services to adopting parents and birth parents. Their entire staff is dedicated to helping guide everyone in the adoption triad through a process with integrity and complete support. You can check out their services at AdoptionNetwork.com. That's AdoptionNetwork.com. You're listening to Kelly Ellison, your Adoption Coach Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you dream of adopting a newborn but don't know where to begin? Are you facing an unplanned pregnancy and want to learn about adoption as an option? Adoption Network Law Center can help. Adoption Network Law Center is a California law corporation providing quality adoption services to adopting parents and birth mothers. Our entire staff is dedicated to helping guide everyone in the adoption triad through the process with integrity and complete support. Call us to learn more at 877-292-4188. 877-292-4188. Adoption Network Law Center, helping build families one miracle at a time.
America's Christian Credit Union believes every child deserves a forever family. Our adoption loan program has helped over 500 children find a loving home. We understand the adoption process and will work with you to find the financial solution that will be best for your family. Find out about our adoption loans on our website at www.americaschristiancu.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-343-6328. Once again, that's 1-800-343-6328 for an adoption loan with America's Christian Credit Union on approved credit and rates subject to change without notice, federally insured by the NCUA.
Considering international adoption but don't know where to begin or which agency to select? Let EAC, a nonprofit Hague-accredited agency, guide you on your adoption journey. EAC will walk with you through the country selection and paperwork processes. EAC separates itself from other agencies by providing world-class in-country staff who will allow you to focus on your adoption journey. EAC has been assisting families and children for over 20 years. Let EAC's experience work for you. EAC is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 1-866-586-5656 or visit www.eaci.com.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are listening to Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. Please send questions or comments about the show to coach@youradoptioncoachradio.com. Now, back to the show.
And we are back. I want to do a call out for our sponsor, European Adoption Consultants. EACI is celebrating over 22 years assisting families in completing international adoptions. EAC is an international child placing agency. They are Hague accredited, China licensed, and approved to complete adoptions in many countries around the world for people living in the United States. If you'd like to get more information about them and their services, you can contact them at EACI.com. They are also one of our affiliate agencies, using our innovative financial tools to help you bridge the financial gap of adoption. And so we're back with Nishtha Mira, author and adoptive parent. Nishtha is sharing her perspective on transracial adoption through her article written in March for Guernica, Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair. I will get that right, I promise, Nishtha. How did you come up with that topic or the title? It's obvious after you read the article, but it just does kind of strike you, doesn't it?
The title is from a Nina Simone song. And okay. It's a romantic love song, obviously. Not about necessarily, it's about romantic love between two adults, but I was always struck by that phrase and just the way that my whole world shifted, right, when this little person came into it and suddenly, right, everything looked different because of him.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got a couple things going on here, and you talk about this in your article about, you know, the makeup of your family. So two women raising an African American child. So you have a lot of things. It reminded me. My daughter came home from school one day, and she said, "Oh, my little friend Maddie wants to play with us. Would you call her?" And she said to me, "Maddie doesn't have a mom." I said, "I'll call her mom." And she goes, "Well, Maddie doesn't have a mommy." And I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And she goes, "No, Maddie has a daddy and a papa." And I had to go through this. I mean, you know, I just had, my brain had to go chunk, chunk, chunk. Mm-hmm. I had to go through this kind of process. And finally I said, "Oh, well, okay, well, let's call them then and let's do a play date." You know, it was just this whole kind of shift. I found myself mm-hmm. going through these various different shifts. I bet you experienced that a lot, do you? I mean, there's just a lot of things going on here.
We do have a lot going on. My partner is white. I am from of Indian origin. My family's from India. Our son is African American. We joke, we're like the United Colors of Benetton. You know, we should like put us in a commercial or something. But it's funny you mentioned that story. Shiv's very best friend at school, August, is parents, I think his dad is Jewish and his mom is, you know, Caucasian, and they're buddies. And apparently a teacher at school was telling me the other day, they were talking and August said something like, "Oh, I have a mommy and a papa and you have two mommies." And Shiv said, "No, I have a one mommy and one Gigi," because that's his name for my partner, Jill. And apparently they went back and forth about this. You know, "No, you have two mommies. No, I have one mommy and one GG." You know, and then they ultimately just agreed to disagree about the categorization. But I just love that it's so normalized for them, right?
Right.
And so, like it was for your daughter, right? Like, "No, mom, you know, this is the makeup of her family, right? And get mm-hmm. with it, you know?" And
right.
There's just something really refreshing to me about that.
Well, and I don't think it's, you know, it's the exposure to that. You know, if we go back to those folks who, and I still can go in the grocery store and I will get a sneer or you know, I can see people's eyes kind of following us. Mm. You know, they don't necessarily say anything, you know, but I get it. I mean, I'm not stupid, you know. I get that they're trying to make sense of this, mm-hmm. right? And my daughter has China sisters in the same city. And so many times I have several with me, several, you know, with me. And then at first time, we were a host family to a Korean young woman.
And so you have a lot going on.
Right. And so you can appreciate I had a teenager who was Asian, and then I had little ones who were Asian. And, you know, and so there were always these looks and that kind of thing. But I think that there is the exposure to really understanding that we have to turn the box on its ear as we define family.
Absolutely. And to me, it's about room. You know, there's so many different ways that family looks, and I think all of us have experienced some of this regardless, even if our family is super traditional, right? Who hasn't experienced what chosen family feels like, right? You know, you spend holidays with people you're not related to by blood, right? Or you have these traditions with your very close friends, and those people are your family, right? We've all had these experiences of how this word is so much bigger than what we tend to refer to it as, and I just think celebrating that and making room for that, making the umbrella bigger, right? So there's more room underneath.
Right. And I was actually reflecting on our call today and our interview today and really thinking, you know, where have we lost sight of the fact that we are one big melting pot anyway? Everyone came from somewhere, right? Where did we lose that? It feels like in some ways that we've lost sight of that and that family can be defined in so many different ways. And as you said, to broaden that umbrella. Appreciate so much, Nishta, you spending time with us today and sharing this wonderful perspective. And again, if you would like to get more information about Nishta and her work, you can find her at bluejeangourmet.com. The title of the article is The Color of My True Love's Hair is Black on Interracial Adoption in Post-Racial America. It's a very, very good read. Before you go, I want to hear about your book. What's about your book?
So,
just give us the title really quickly because we're out of time.
Untitled, as of yet, but I'm working on a new collection of essays that deals with all the things we were just talking about, making the definition of family bigger, exploring sort of that whole piece.
That's great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today. What a great show, and we hope that you will share your perspectives with us. You can reach me at coach@youradoptioncoachradio.com or on adoption.net. Thanks again. Have a great day.
Hope today's program gave you some inspiration as well as information about adoption. Please tune in next Saturday at noon Pacific Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Your Adoption Coach on the Voice America Variety Channel. And join us for our weekly replay of the show on Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Thank you again for listening.